So today we're talking about lifting your leadership ceiling, and for me this is a really, really important subject because my job is basically to equip churches all over Europe to work with young people. And unless I know how to train people in leadership skills, that's not going to happen. And unless I train people to do my job for me, I'm never going to be home. So it's really important in the work that I do, and even the work that I do in my city, to equip other people as leaders. And we're using the word leader here. I didn't write this word. It's not disciple. It's not model maker. The word is leader. So I might begin to sound very businessy in the way I speak, but I think the business world does have some truths for us in the Christian community to learn. So I'll say that first. Say, first things first. God calls the most unlikely people to leadership positions. What were the disciples before they were called?
Nobody.
Nobody, thank you. Well, they were somebody. They were fishermen. You're a Norwegian, you should appreciate fishermen. So, many of them were fishermen. They were
smelly men.
Okay, yes, and therefore they were perfect for youth ministry. Fishermen, tax collectors, not the kind of people you'd want to recruit to start your international ministry. No business experience, no leadership experience, not the obvious people. And yet, they were God's chosen instrument to launch his church here on earth. Isn't that amazing? I said at the beginning of the week, I have never been trained to do what I do. And I think that's one of the secrets of my success. And I'm not saying you shouldn't go to college to study what you do. And I think it's wonderful that you're here learning how to do youth ministry. But because I was never trained to do what I did, I had to rely on God a whole lot more. And also listen to other people who had a lot to teach me on a one-on-one way. So some of you probably are thinking, what am I doing in youth ministry? You're doing what God has called you to do. And some of you probably are thinking, my ministry life cycle will be this one small church community. And it's possible that God has a much bigger vision for you guys. For years, I thought that my ministry was just going to be in one little city. And now it's right now all over Europe. My wife sometimes wishes it was still in one little city, but it's not. I never expected it. I never wanted it, but it's what God has given to me or put me in a position to do. So that could be the same for any of you guys. Usually the person who thinks they have the least to offer is the one that God wants to do the most through. So that's one principle that I think is really, really true. But if we are going to be successful, it's really important our strength comes from God. And this is a problem for me. I do have natural abilities. I do like to be independent. I do like to do things on my own strength. And it's really, really important for me to remember that Jesus understood that he could do nothing without his Father. Before he made any important decision in his ministry, he prayed. And he didn't just say, "Dear Lord Jesus, be with me now. Amen. Thank you. Dear Lord Jesus, I'm thinking to myself. Dear Father." And just to give you one quick illustration of that, oftentimes in our ministries, when we begin to program things or plan things, we get together and we have our meetings. And at the beginning of the meeting, we say, "Can someone please pray? Dear Lord Jesus, please be with us today. Help us to make wise decisions for you. And amen." And then we continue with our meeting. This is in my ministry. It's happened very often. I'm not going to say it happens in yours, but it does happen in mine very often. We forget the power of prayer, and it becomes just a tool that we kind of, it's a Christian meeting. We have to start with prayer. And last year, four leaders from my youth ministry, we met, and we knew that we had a really, really, really important thing to decide. And it was actually in my local ministry, in my city, we had to decide the whole future of our ministry. It was just, we were planning long term. And we met, "Dear Lord Jesus, please be with us today. Your plan is not ours, amen." Right, let's start talking. And for about an hour and a half, we were talking through so many different things. But it felt like we were in a fog. Just, we couldn't come up with a plan. And we're quite sharp people, so we should have come up with a plan. But it was just... And then one of us realized, well, you know, we haven't actually really prayed. Like, we did the... But we haven't actually said, "Really, Lord, this is your ministry, not ours. Please show us what your will is, not ours." And so we decided to stop the meeting And then we'd go off individually and pray for 20 minutes. So we didn't even pray together. We said that we'd go to a different room and each of us pray for 20 minutes. So we prayed for 20 minutes, came back, and it was really, really interesting. It shouldn't be interesting because we're Christians and we know this is true. But we all had the same answer. And the same answer was, we have to shut down our youth ministry. Which is really weird because we're the largest youth ministry in our region of the country. but that was the answer we received. And it started off, the first step we were all given clearly was to close down your youth center. And that's not what we expected. Our youth center has been the center of our ministry for 10 years. We get money from the city and state to run it. It's a place where our teenagers feel like it's their home. It's, you know, when we turn up with our choir ministry, we don't have to set up everything. It's all there. We just turn up, turn on the switch, and we can have our rehearsals. Like, it's an amazing, when people see our youth center, they're like, this is amazing that you guys have this. And we, all four of us, felt that God told us to close it down. Isn't that crazy? It's not what we expected at all, but all four of us got that answer. And so within 5 minutes, we decided, okay, we have to close down our youth center. But where are we supposed to go? And actually, three of us got the answer of where we should go, and it was to move into a church. So we called the church and said, we'd like to have a meeting with you. We feel like God has told us to shut down our center and move everything that we do to your building. How do you feel about that? Actually, it's the church that I go to. And it's kind of amazing because God changed some hearts of members of the elder board, and we moved in 3 months ago. Now, what's happened is that oftentimes our teenagers, for our teenagers, the youth center was their home. It's where they felt safe, loved, accepted. The church was where we invited them to as a building on a Sunday or to something else. Now our teenagers go every week to the church building and it's become their home. And now when they hear that some people are doing something on Sunday morning, would you like to come? A lot more of them are coming to church because they're in the same building. Last month, our church had like a day of cleaning the whole building, and like 25 of our young people went. And funnily enough, very few of the Christian teenagers went, who from Christian families, but our non-Christian teenagers went and helped clean the church. It's completely changed how our church sees our youth ministry, and it's completely changed how our teenagers see our church. And it happened because we remembered that we have to pray. So that's really, really, really important. Completely illogical step, would have never have done it had we not felt that God told us to do it, and it's transforming our ministry in a really, really good way. So pray. We have to pray, and not just say we pray. One other thing, we're not created to work alone, but as part of a larger group. How many disciples were there? 12. When Jesus sent them out to preach that the kingdom of God is near, how did he send them out? 2 by 2. He didn't send them off on their own. We should not be doing ministry on our own. It's really important that if we're in ministry, we find people to be working alongside with us. And a lot of you guys have teams, but it's really important to make sure those teams continue and develop and we don't end up doing ministry on our own. It's the quickest way to compromise ourselves and to burn ourselves out. So, okay. So that's a quick introduction. That was the Christian bit. Now we're going to get practical. That was a joke. Okay, so setting priorities. So I'm going to give you guys some tools. I'm not going to tell you which is the better, because everybody thinks in different ways. But what I do know is that you all have a list of 25 different things that you could do this week, and you have to decide what 5 things you're going to do this week. Is that true? So here are 3 or 4 different tools that you could use. the first one, which is such a key priority, and in any case, in your leadership position, this should be true. Only do what only you can do. If somebody else can do one of those things, get somebody else to do it. You should do what you are very good at and not try to do everything else. That is how you'll maximize your ministry impact, by focusing on your strength. And I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Eat a frog. Do the thing you really don't want to do first. Because in my life, this thing that I really don't want to do is always hanging over my head, and it's taking the joy out of the other things, because I'm like, once I finish this, I'm going to have to do this. And so I don't enjoy doing this, because I know that this is waiting for me. And so I'm learning that there are no frogs here. You can't eat them. I'm learning that I have to eat the frog first and get it over and done with, and then I'll enjoy doing everything else. And oftentimes, the thing with that is your frog, it really needs detailed attention, and it means you're doing it when you're still awake and sharp. So do the thing you don't want to do first. Do you guys know this principle, rocks, stones, and sand? Yeah, can you explain it?
It's a psychologist who did this experiment. So he gave a jar to his students with rock, sands, and cobbles, I think, small stones. So he asked them, what was the best way to fill the jar with those three? So there were different answers. Somebody would say, you can put the sand first, and then the cobbles, and then the big stones. But actually, it proved that you have to start with the biggest first, and then, as far as I remember,
yep.
And then with the small ones, and then put the sand last, or something like that.
Yeah, does that make sense? If you do your small tasks first, and then your medium-sized tasks, because you're leaving this big task, because it's a big task, you won't have time to complete your big task. So do your biggest task first, and around that, then you can do a small task or a medium-sized task, and then your next biggest task, and then a couple of small little things that are kind of like a break for you, and then your next biggest task. But if you do the nice little tasks first, you'll run out of time when it comes to be doing the big task. So do the big thing first. The 6x6 principle. If you're not responsible for long-term planning, then this might not be something for you to do. But and this is something I got from Bill Hybels. Write down 6 tasks you want to complete every 6 weeks. So in the next 6 weeks, these are the 6 things I have to do. Because I have 20 things I have to do in the next 3 months, and that becomes a big thing. But if I just have 6 things to focus on, then that becomes more manageable for me. And then Stephen Covey, he wrote this thing called the Covey Quadrants, and this is what I use now, actually. So you have to write, of all the lists, you basically create a grid of four boxes. Okay, so important and urgent, important but not urgent but important, and then not important and not urgent. Yeah, and I write down all of the things that I need to do into each of these tasks. And to be honest, if I have a long list here, it means I'm not running my time properly. You shouldn't be having lots of things here. They should all be here, here, and here. And once they're here, it means that I've not been managing my time. But it does happen. So you write down, I really have got to get this done by tomorrow. If I don't do that, I'm going to get fired. That's important and urgent. Buy my wife a birthday present. Now, that is really important, but her birthday is in 11 months' time. So it's not so urgent. So that would be important but not urgent, my wife's birthday present. Now, very often my wife's birthday present shoots over to here because I've not been paying attention to the months as they go by. But do you understand? Make a list of what are your priorities, and then this is what you need to do first. What would you do second? Probably important but not urgent, because then you'll do it really well. And you're not doing it at the last minute, okay? Urgent but not important is usually something that if you don't do it, it's not the end of the world. And it's usually something that somebody else has asked you to do at the last minute anyway. So we need to learn to say no sometimes. And then not important and not urgent. Sometimes I love doing these things. I really do. They're so nice, but I shouldn't be wasting my time doing them. So, okay. So that's just another tool to help. But no matter how we're planning our time, and this is really, really, really super duper important, we have to remember the Sabbath principle. So, in the Old Testament, what was the punishment for not keeping the Sabbath? Huh? Death, yes. If you did not have the rest God wanted you to have one day a week, he would make sure you would rest forever. That's kind of a bad joke, but it's true. The punishment for not keeping the Sabbath in the Old Testament was death. There is a reason why. I think the punishment for not keeping the Sabbath principle today is death, just not in the same way. The Sabbath was made for man. Man was not made for the Sabbath. If you do not take time off from your ministry, you will not be effective long-term in your ministry. It's so true. And especially if you have families, how many people here are married? Okay, this is really, really, really important for us. And if you have children, then it's even more really, 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 really important for us. And not just because like we need to spend time with our children, but because we're teaching our children something. We're teaching our children biblical truths, or we're not teaching them biblical truths. And we're teaching them to love our ministry, or we're teaching them to hate our ministry. So it's really important that we keep a Sabbath. Now, there are times, who's running camps this summer? Okay, at camps, how in the world do you keep a Sabbath on a camp? Every camp is different, but it would be wise to try to build in at least a day off or half a day off into your camp schedule. And I'm really surprised when I meet people that don't do that. How can you possibly run 7 days from 7 a.m. till midnight without a break? I don't know how that's possible. So it's really wise to at least have a half a day break in your camps. With the camps that I run, everybody gets at least 1.5 hours off a day. No matter what their job is, they have to have 1.5 hours off a day. And it's not to prepare for something else. It's to do whatever you need to do. And I encourage people to read the Bible. Because actually, working on camps is when you're most vulnerable to attack. And you guys know that. So, okay, so what can you do to make sure you keep a Sabbath? Any ideas? Does anyone actually have a system for making sure they keep a Sabbath? A really good piece of advice. So a really good way to help you keep a healthy Sabbath is to plan what you're going to do on the Sabbath. And don't just expect that it'll be restful. I'm really bad at not resting on the Sabbath because I don't plan. And that, as a parent, that's really bad. You had something? You had the same thing, so plan. Yeah. So you're choosing the day wisely. Don't choose to take a day off the day before something important, because on that day off, all you're going to do is think about the important thing. And one more thing?
Get out.
Oh, and leave. Get out. Yeah. One more thing, and then we have to keep going. So learn to say no. That's really important. My wife would wish I'd learned to turn off the phone. And I'm surprised none of you said it, actually. Well, some of the women were maybe thinking it. Turn off your phone. Don't answer the phone if you know it's going to be a work-related phone call. It's so obvious, but how many of us do it? Myself included. So, okay, and connected with that is Andy Stanley. He wrote a book called Choosing to Cheat. What he was basically saying is you can't do everything that society expects you to do the way society expects you to do it. Your office will want you to work 60 hours a week if you're willing to work 60 hours a week. Your ministry will want you to work 160 hours a week if you're willing to let your ministry give you 160 hours a week. So someone is going to be disappointed. So be careful in how you do that. Now, what Andy Stanley says is your job should be the person you disappoint, not your family. It's not so simple for us who are in ministry, because you're like, well, but I'm in ministry, that's God. It's, you know, how does that work? So one thing that I heard last year, which I think is really, really, really wise, is you've got to keep your pots filled up with water. So I need to focus on my relationship with God. That's my first priority as a father, as a husband, as a youth worker. No matter what I'm doing, as somebody who drives buses for a living, as someone who's a student, whatever your vocation, job, lifestyle is, your first priority is your relationship with God, your Father. And you heard that last night, and you've been hearing this all week. Out of the overflow of that, if I'm doing that, there is an overflow that comes into this pot here, and this pot is my family. And I need to make sure that my family is healthy and my family also is loving Jesus. And out of that overflow of a healthy and happy family, I can then focus on my ministry. Does that make sense? Now, very, very often, and I've been guilty of this in the past, very often, where do we focus our devotions and time and energy? yeah, we were like, I mean, ministry, it's growing, it's expanding, God's blessing us, or it's not growing. Ah, so this is where I put my priority, and I try to fill this up, and then out of the leftovers, my family gets something, and out of the leftovers of that, like, I, you know, my Lord gets something left. Okay, now that's the surest and quickest way to your family hating your ministry, and your children not loving Jesus. And it's, you know, I have to understand now that my children are really, really young, that what they think of ministry and of our Lord Jesus in their future is really badly or goodly well impacted by the way I am now, in the way I work. And especially some of us travel an awful lot for our ministries. I'm one of those people. So I have to make sure that A, I travel sensibly, and B, when I'm not traveling, I am at home. That's really important. And I have to find a way for my children to understand I'm theirs. For me, it also means I can't work at home. I cannot work at home because my children don't understand that when I'm in my office, I can't focus on them. And to be honest, sometimes my wife doesn't understand. Yeah, we all know this. Please, just for 2 minutes, do this. It's just 2 minutes, but it's broken your train of thought completely. So I've learned that I cannot work from home. I might think that I'm spending more time with my children when I'm in my office working from home, but it's not. It's damaging to them. So when I know that for 4 or 5 hours I need to work, I leave the apartment. And for me, that sometimes means going to McDonald's or wherever the nearest Wi-Fi is. But when I'm at work, my children completely understand that concept. What they don't understand is that I'm at work in our apartment. Now, when they're older, they might understand that, but now that they're little, they don't. So I have to leave my apartment to do my work. So that's just something I've learned. So we need to take care of our families. It's so important. Okay, learning opportunities. What did Paul say the other day? Do you remember? Does anyone remember what he said? A leader is a reader. And I know I'm shooting through different themes here, and I'm sorry that I'm doing that, but I'm just as much as I can. A leader is a reader. I was the world's worst student when I was at college. I was convinced, actually, I was not going to pass my college degree, and it was by God's grace that I did. So I'm not someone who naturally studies, but in ministry I've learned if I want to be better at what I do, I have got to learn to study. But I can also be wise in what I study, because I've learned what I enjoy reading and what I like reading. So there are so many books out there in youth ministry, in management, in whatever you're doing. If you're a widget maker, I'm sure there's a lot of books about how to make widgets. And you wonder, which is the best? Which widget making book should I buy? And one thing that I've learned to do is when I'm speaking to someone and I feel like they've got something to teach me, one of the things I ask is, what books have you read recently that have been really helpful to you? And that's a really good way of me. I don't have to like read all the, go online and Google best management books or best ministry books. I just ask people who I feel like, this is someone that's got knowledge that I need. What are you reading? And very often they're reading something I need to read. And I actually did this last night with you. I started telling you books and I was like, oh, you've read all my books, so what are you reading? So it's really important. It's just an easy way to know what to read. And actually this is a really easy book to read. If you've never read a management book before or a leadership book before, this is probably the first one you could or should read. And the reason why is because many people are, well, who here has never read a management or leadership book? Who has never read a leadership book? Oh, only a few of you, great. Oftentimes people don't want to read management books because they feel like it's boring or too daunting, too difficult. But this book is really easy to read. It's actually in your notes at the bottom. It's really easy to read, and the way he's written it, you can read it each chapter in 10 minutes. So you can read it on the tram, for example, or on the train, or on the toilet, or wherever. There's a different lesson that you can read within 10 minutes. So it's a really easy book to start reading if you want to begin to learn. And many of these lessons are actually really, really good. You may or may not agree with Bill Hybels' seeker service approach, but you cannot doubt that he's done something amazing and must have learned how to lead people along the way. And this is what that book is about. To kindle or not to kindle? That is the question. Well, I have a friend who works for Amazon. He's retired, but he was quite high up in Amazon. So I found out about the Kindle before all of you did. And when he showed me the first ever Kindle that got produced, you know what I told him? That's never going to sell. Like, because I love reading. And one reason why I love reading is the feel of the book in your hand. The pages. Yeah, a pencil or pen. Yeah, like just sitting down with a cup of coffee and a comfy chair with a book in my hand. I love that. And replacing a book with a computer? No, that's not going to work. So actually, I was really against Kindles for a long time, just because I felt like aesthetically it's not me. But then I started traveling, and when I was traveling, I wanted to take 3 different books with me. And then I started flying, and when you're taking 3 books on a long journey, and they're big, thick books, it gets heavy. And then I started, I do underline all the time when I read. And then when I was putting together a seminar, I'd be like, I read that somewhere. I underlined something somewhere that I can use in the seminar. Where is it? And then I'd flick through about 400 different books trying to find out, where did I read this quote? And so that's actually why I switched to the Kindle. Because on a Kindle, you can underline stuff and then really easily find what you've underlined. So for me, it helps when I'm putting together seminars. It also really helps when I travel, because I can read 5 books at once and have it all in the Kindle. And or whatever other tool you want to use. I'm not saying Kindle, iPad, whatever there is. So I have found a Kindle really, really useful in my life and in my ministry, even though when it first came out, I was really against it. And I still do miss having a book in my hand, but I've really quickly gotten used to having the Kindle in my hand. So that's just one thing I'll say. Podcasts. Does anyone listen to podcasts? Now, I'm sure we all listen to sermons because we're good Christians. Anyone listen to leadership podcasts or youth ministry podcasts? So this is one that I listen to, Andy Stanley's Leadership Podcast. It's 20 minutes long. It's really easy to listen to, even if English isn't your first language. He uses really simple words, mostly. It's also on your notes at the end. And I find it really useful. Does anyone have any other leadership podcasts that they listen to, that they would recommend? Catalyst. Yeah, Catalyst. Do you guys know what that, I'll spell it here? I'm going to use up all the paper on the last day. Is it Y-S-T? Yeah, Y, thank you. It's the funniest thing. I used to be an English teacher with the worst spelling you could ever imagine. So Catalyst. That's also another really, really good one. Anyone know of any others? No? And yeah. And the beauty of podcasts is that if you're driving your car, sitting on a tram, walking to the bus, that's when you can use them. So I listen to podcasts during wasted time, times when I would otherwise just be. So use that time wisely. Listen to podcasts. If you have a long car journey, you can listen to music or you can listen to sermons. I listen to both, depending on the length of the journey, but it's really good to listen to journeys. So use that time wisely to help yourself grow. And mentors. Does anyone here have a mentor? And have they helped you? Yeah, of course. Mentors, it's so wise to have a mentor, but it's so hard to get a mentor. Now, 2 years ago, I had this idea of, I have to find my one mentor who will be my guru, who will help me grow. I've said already, I wasn't trained to do what I do, and I don't even know what I don't know. So I was like, I have to find someone who will tell me what I don't know and fill in those gaps. But a year ago, someone told me, you are not going to find one person who will do that. Because anyone who is a good mentor is probably mentoring other people already and won't have the time to give to you. But what you can do is find 5 or 6 mentors and use them differently. So now I have 3 or 4 people that even this week, I've sat down with 3 different people just for an hour to bounce off ideas. And they're people who I know are above something I have something to learn from. And it's a continued conversation. The last time I spoke to one of them was 2 months ago. So I bounce off ideas from him, I go and implement it, and then I tell him how it was, and then we work out together a next step. So don't necessarily look for one mentor in your life. Look for different people who can help you with different areas of ministry that you need help with. So for example, to be honest, if I wanted help with relational ministry, Marushka is the person I'd want to go to because she is the most, she is relational ministry. On the other hand, Marushka is a girl. And so playing the Xbox with your guys, well, actually, you've worked with a lot of guys, so that would be a good thing. But I would also want to find some guys as well who are good with relational ministry and get ideas from them. So we're always learning from people that we meet. And finally, journals and magazines. The Leadership Journal is a really good one. Youth Worker, and these are in your notes, so you can get them. Both of them offer a 3 months free subscription. So you can get them for 3 months for free and then decide, yes, this is useful or not. And they're both on web pages as well. So youthworker.com, I think, is the journal, and leadershiporg, I think, .com. I will tell you after. If you're interested in finding out the web pages, I have it on my computer, so I can tell you. But those are also really useful places to learn. Okay. Any questions about learning opportunities? And I know I'm shooting through things here. Are you still awake? You are. Okay. By the way, I have a laser here. If anyone starts to look like they're falling asleep, you're going to get zapped in the eye. Okay. This is the best subject for your last ever meeting of the Leadership Network, isn't it? Leadership Forum. Great. Because for some of you, leadership is not what you're interested in, but you know, we need to know it. Okay. Accountability. Track your hours. We started doing this in my ministry, and Marushka started doing this in her ministry last year for you guys. Okay, I was shocked at how many hours I was working. My wife wasn't, she knew. But I was, and it was unbiblical. And it told me two things. One is I need to change the way I work. I need to work smarter. And two, I need to find more staff. Or three, change my priorities. But had I not begun to track my hours, I would not have worked it out. My wife had worked it out, but I hadn't. So it's really important. And one reason why it's good to track your hours is because you can set yourself like priorities of what you have to do during a month. Like, I'm a missionary. 100% of my income comes from support, from people who, as individuals, decide to support what I do. 100%. So generally, it's said that if that is your income, you need to spend 10% of your working hours maintaining that income. And that's either staying in touch with your supporters, letting them know how you're using, how God is using the money that they are donating, and also opening channels for new supporters. 10% of your time. Now, I can assume that I'm using 10% of my time, but when I started tracking my hours, I realized it was 2% of my time. For some people, they might work out they're spending 20% of their time on support raising, in which case you're not really doing ministry. Well, you are, but not as much ministry as you could be doing. So it's really, that's another reason to track hours is one, to make sure that you're not working too many hours or not enough hours, and B is to make sure you're working on the right things during the week, the right number of hours on the right problems. So, okay, covenant eyes. I'm a guy. There are problems that guys have when we open our computers and go online. And actually, studies are showing that girls are beginning to have those problems too. And a big problem for a lot of guys is porn. As well-intentioned as any guy can be, there is always going to be that temptation. And sometimes, it's not even that I'm tempted to go there. Sometimes, through some kind of search, something just pops up. And I didn't mean for it to pop up, but it's there, and what am I going to do next? And statistics show that amongst us guys, a healthy percentage of us are using porn, as well-intentioned as we are. And for the girls, actually, statistically, it's true for you too now. There are many, many different ways to solve this problem. Obviously, it's a spiritual problem. It's a relational problem. But a really practical way to help ourselves is to use software that helps us to not do this. And there are some software programs that will block you and not allow you to go there. There are other software programs that will tell an accountability partner where you've been online during the week. It doesn't block me from going anywhere, but it will tell my accountability partner what I've done, and it sends him an email every week showing where I've been, and that allows him to be like, so Terry, tell me about that website. And there might be an innocent reason why something ended up popping up, because the way it's not 100%, it will put us a warning out on some websites that are very innocent, but it's just really, really useful to do. And honestly, in my life, with the way I work, I wish I could say, I'm not going to go on this site because I know it's wrong or it'll hurt my family. Sometimes the motivation is because I know someone's going to find out about it. And that's just me being open and honest about who I am. Knowing that someone else is going to find out about it can stop me. And if that's true of you, I would really, really recommend something like this. So, or a life transformation group or an accountability partner or something like that. We're in ministry. We are targets. The best way that Satan can destroy our ministries is by destroying us. And God gave us a way we can protect ourselves, and that is community. Neil Cole has this thing that he uses, and that's called Life Transformation Group. And basically what you do is it's three people, and you set yourself 10 chapters or 20 chapters of the Bible you read during the week. You come together and you discuss what you've read. You go through a list of accountability questions. So have you shown God's love this week? Have you lied to anyone this week? Have you blah, blah. For guys, one of those questions would be, have you used porn this week? The last question is, have you lied in the last 5 minutes? So you go for confession, because confession is actually, it's when we have unconfessed sin, it's a lead weight around our necks. We need to have a system, an environment, a community where we can confess. And then you pray. But you pray for the lost. So you have a list of three people that you're praying for. And so if my group had three guys, we'd have nine people on our list. And it's people who are lost. And if my Bible, if the homework is reading 20 chapters during the week, every time I open my Bible, I should pray for three of those lost people. And they don't have to be on my list. They can be on my friend's list. But it means that people are being prayed for all the time. It also means I'm always praying for people who are lost. And if I'm praying for lost people, it really helps me to do something about it. Because sometimes what can happen to us people in full-time ministry is that we can be so working hard to share the gospel and teach people how to share the gospel that we don't share the gospel. And I can look back at weeks in my life where I think I have not shared the gospel with anybody in the last month. Like with my teenagers, yeah. Okay, you know, that's my job. It's what I do. But before I was into full-time ministry, I had gospel-centered conversations a lot more often with unchurched people than I do now. It's a really interesting paradigm. And I think that's true of a lot of people in full-time Christian work. So this just helps us to make sure that we are continually praying for lost people and having those conversations. So that's just one tool that you can use. And by the way, with this system, if in my group we decide that our homework is 20 chapters a week, if one of us hasn't read those 20 chapters, even if they've only read 9, or if they've read 19 chapters, but not the 20th, the next week we all read the same 20 chapters again. Okay? And if the next week one of us, 15 chapters, brother, 15, it's been a busy week, we all read the same chapters again. And that does two things. One, it kind of motivates you to read the Bible. But on the other hand, the other thing is, when you read the Bible, in my experience, God shows me different truths when I read the same passages over and over again. And so it's just helping us to get deeper and deeper and allowing God's word to work in different ways in our lives. So that's just something else that we found useful. Okay. Developing leadership potential in young people. A leader's job is to develop leaders, not followers. I used to be really good at developing followers, not leaders, and then I got really tired. We need to develop leaders. Now, Paul spoke yesterday about spiritual maturity and making sure that you are developing the right people who have that spiritual depth and maturity. That is absolutely, completely true. when you're talking about developing leaders who are spiritually leading other people, I would say we can blur the lines when it comes to developing young people to play an active role in your ministry. And the reason why I say that is because I train a lot of non-Christian teenagers to have leadership roles, and it works for us. And I'll talk about why and how in a little bit. In our organization, our leaders don't organize anything anymore, unless it's a really big event. And even some of them, we don't lead anymore. We create one or two mentors to equip a team of teenagers to lead an event. So what does that mean practically? Well, I'll talk about that in a little bit. So reasons for developing teenage leaders. Jesus did it. That's kind of obvious. Showing teenagers we trust them can be life-changing. It can be completely life-changing. So this boy here, Pavel, when we launched one of our ministries, he was a 14-year-old boy, and he already had the piercings when he was 14. And he was just kind of stood by the drum kit. And so I was like, well, you want to learn how to play the drums? So for 2 weeks, we taught him some basic drum beats. The problem was that when we launched that ministry, we had over 100 kids coming every week and not very many leaders. And so we didn't have the manpower to do everything we wanted to do. And so after the third week, we told Pavel, we will teach you something else on the drums after you've taught three people what you know. Does that make sense? That's not even like teaching him how to lead someone. It's just, and we weren't thinking psychologically this would be really good for him. We were thinking we can't teach everyone the drums. So let's get him to do something that he knows already. It changed his life. That one conversation changed his life. We didn't know it at the time. And the reason why was we were the first people in his life who ever said to him, I believe you have something that you can do for somebody else. Does that make sense? I wasn't thinking it. That really wasn't what I was thinking at the time. And I didn't realize at the time that that's what was the beginning of a life change for him. But that's what it was. If we give young people responsibility, we might know that they're going to make a few mistakes, but it could be a key to changing their lives. Pip Wilson. Does anyone know who Pip Wilson is? He's a youth ministry mentor in England for a lot of... He's a giant of youth ministry in England. And in his biography, he wrote that when he was 16 years old, he was in a youth ministry and he was the rebel. And the leaders of the youth ministry came to him and they said, Pip, we can only do one of two things with you right now. We have to tell you to leave the ministry, or we have to make you a leader. What's it going to be? And it changed his life completely. And oftentimes when teenagers are fighting against us, it's because we're not channeling the energy the way we can do. And I was a good example of this. I always fought against my leaders because I had a lot to offer and they couldn't see it or didn't want me to do it. And so my reaction was to use that energy to fight against them. Teenagers have a lot of energy. Channel it for the good. So today's teenagers are tomorrow's leaders. That's another reason why we should develop young people. Andy, he was 16 here. We took him to Latvia on a mission trip. He was already an amazingly mature person. When he was 17 years old, he planted a church. And I really mean that when I say that. When he was 17 years old, he planted a church. And now it has, do you know anything about his church in Fidelmistek? Do you know anything about his church in Fidelmistek? I think it has like 25 members right now. And a lot of those are people who have come to Christ through that church. 17 years old. And how old were you when you planted your church? 20 years old when he planted a church. Today's teenagers are tomorrow's leaders. And obviously delegating enables you to spend more time on relationship building. In my ministry on a Thursday is our main ministry night. I don't run anything. I hang out with the teenagers. The teenagers run everything. It takes time to get there, but it enables me to build relationships. Why don't we develop leaders? I don't have the time or resources. This was my excuse in the olden days. But now there's a concept, pay now to play later. It is painful to develop young people. It will cost you. They will not do it as well as you initially, but they will do it as well as you eventually. I can do it better, faster, more easily. This was another excuse that I always had. They can't do it as good as me. Well, of course they can't. They don't have the experience that I have. This girl changed my mind. Her name is Veronica. She was 14 when she wanted to become a conductor in the choir that I led. And it was a pretty good choir, actually. And I knew that she was musical, so I thought, okay, I'll teach you how to become a conductor. And part of that is that we teach teenagers how to arrange music for choirs. And with the system that I have, it's kind of like I arrange half the song, show them how I do it, and then they go off and arrange the other half of the song, and then we talk about how good their half of the song is, but it would have been better had they done this. Does that make sense? So she came back with her finished product. It was way better than anything I could have ever done. Way better. She was 14 years old. When she was 15 years old, she became the main conductor of our choir, and that meant she began teaching other teenagers how to conduct. And she did that way better than me, because quite frankly, she's nicer than I am. Like, sometimes I can be a little bit scary. I know that you don't think that because I'm being nice today. But sometimes my personality can be a little bit scary or dominant for teenagers. And so some people wouldn't want to learn something from me just because of who I am. Everybody wants to learn from her. And so she actually did a way better job of developing young leaders as a 16-year-old than I had done. And what if they make a mistake? They will make a mistake. It will get messy. Teenagers make mistakes. Youth work is messy. Live with it. And too much responsibility will go to their heads and they will think they are leaders. Yeah, that's a problem. That can be a problem. And that's where what Paul said is really important. You have to be wise in how you develop young people and especially in the phrases that you use. Do not call a teenager a leader unless they're leading a ministry for 10-year-olds. Because when you call a teenager a leader amongst their peers, you in your ministry, you might be setting them up for some kind of success, but in school, you're setting them up for failure. So it's really important that you're wise with how you develop your young people. And this actually is the reason why my leaders never wanted to develop me, because they knew that I was an extremely arrogant person. Now, the reason why I was arrogant was something else entirely. Sorry? What words? Team member. Or so again, with what we do, we organize, for example, if we're organizing Weekend Away, we'll create a team to run that Weekend Away, and we'll train the teenagers how to run a Weekend Away. So they'll be responsible for a Weekend Away, but we won't call them a leader. We'll just call them the team member for this event, for example. Or committee member, or something like that. Yeah. So something that's kind of neutral. Our teenagers are not yet Christians. Some churches cannot or will not develop unchurched kids as leaders or give leadership responsibility. I completely understand why not. I don't have this belief anymore. When were the disciples Christians? That's a question. That is a question. I think discipleship starts before people become Christians. And this is Zuzka. She actually works full-time in ministry now. When she joined our ministry when she was 17 years old. And we saw very quickly that she had some kind of leadership potential. So actually, she was in our ministry for 3 weeks when we offered her the role or the ability to join a team for planning a weekend away. And she did a really good job there. And so she began to get more and more responsibilities. By the time she was 19, she was able to organize really big events, like tours and camps. She became a Christian when she was 19. When she became a Christian, we focused on discipleship, her spiritual maturity. What sometimes happens if you decide that you can't develop people into leadership ability until they become Christian, when they become a Christian, you suddenly start to train them to become leaders and not disciples. Does that make sense? When our kids become Christians, we want them to have learned how to become leaders already so that we can focus on developing them as disciples. That's one reason why we do it. Like Zuzka is now in full-time ministry. She organizes very, very large events now. And she's actually extremely important in the role that she has. And there are a lot of people from our ministry who are now in full-time ministry or in leadership positions in their organizations because we had this philosophy. Doesn't always work out well, but I think the fruit of the risks that we've taken is worth it. And one reason why the ministry that I run has expanded so quickly is because I have a massive pool of talent to use when organizing events. So So another reason our teenagers don't care. They don't want to do these things. In my experience, they do care, but you haven't asked them personally. If I say, can someone volunteer? Who's going to volunteer? No one. If I say, Yuri, do you want to do this? Or can you do this? He'll probably say yes. So just be wise in how you ask people. What did Jesus do? How did he develop young people as leaders? Well, he saw and called out potential. And we're not going to read for the Bible verses because we don't have time because, well, I talk too much. But he saw and called out potential. And we heard this yesterday. It's really important. Always be on the lookout. This kid has a future. And sometimes the teenager that is the biggest problem is your teenager with the biggest potential. Actually, it's oftentimes that's the truth. And if you don't start using that potential, you'll just have a bigger problem. He invited them to be with him. And we've spoken about this all week. Spend time with us. If I'm organizing something, I invite a teenager to come alongside me and do that. I'm a sound engineer. That's something that I also like to do. And if I have to do something with our equipment, I ask a teenager to do it with me. If I'm trying to work out how to use a new digital mixing desk, I definitely ask a teenager to do it with me because they'll learn it much quicker than I will because it's digital. So use teenagers as much as you can with you. He gave them jobs to do. And they were important jobs. They were important jobs, not just little jobs. When you give somebody something to do or give somebody a responsibility for the first time, they must succeed. They must succeed. For many of our teenagers are hurting teenagers. They come from difficult backgrounds. They want to believe that they can do something and be something. We can be a big tool in that, but we can also be a tool in hurting them even more if we give them jobs that they cannot succeed in or don't give them the tools they need to succeed. Okay, so the definition is what is important. So for example, in our ministry, something that can look important is doing the welcome games at the beginning of an evening. It can look important because it's visible. So having teenagers do that, but don't just say, Yuri, can you do the welcome games? Thank you. But saying, okay, this is why we do the game, and this is how we pick the games. So these are the kind of games that are good. So just making sure that they will be successful. And also when you do that, give clear and detailed instructions, ask and answer questions to make sure they understand what you're saying. Use teachable moments. I'm gonna zip forward to this guy here. Oh, okay, I've missed it, okay. Use teachable moments. When things go wrong, turn that into success. But like all my lessons that I've learned in my youth ministry have come from failure. My best lessons that I've learned have come from failure. Failure is not a bad thing. And back to Andy Stanley, he says that it takes 19 failures to find that one big success. And in our cultures, Eastern European, failure is bad. And we need to teach our teenagers that failure is not bad. Failure is inevitable. It's part of a process that we can use to become better at what we do and to learn how to do something better. So you need to treat failure as a good thing, not as a bad thing. And that's hard, but it's really, really important, especially for teenagers. And give feedback. If someone does a good job, you need to build them up. That was fantastic. Well done. If someone does a mediocre job, that was great, well done. Now, if you're gonna do this again, is there anything that you would do differently? What do you think? We need to help the young person become better at what they do. The first time I give responsibility to someone, I tell them exactly what they have to do, exactly. Would you like to do like games? Okay, would you like to do the game at the beginning? So this is how we do it. This is the game that we should probably use. This is how you're going to explain the rules. Any questions, off you go. It's really specific to make sure that it will be successful. The second time, you coach them. Would you like to do the game? Okay, what kind of game do you think would work? when we're thinking about a welcome game? What would be good to use? Oh, that's a good idea. Oh, that's really good. So how would we explain the rules? Do you have any ideas how we can explain the rules really well? Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Oh, that's really good. But what about maybe doing this as well? That would help. So you're letting them come up with how to do it, but you're making sure they come up with the right answers. And then supporting. Would you like to run the games? You've done it already. Do you need any help from me? Anything I can do? Any questions? No? Off you go. And then delegating. Hey, Yuri, you're running the games. Okay, it's a process. And if you do it this way, teenagers will learn to love having responsibility because they've learned how to accept responsibility, and they've also learned how to give responsibility. They've learned how to give responsibility. That's really important. Okay, I have this principle called the Yerkapolter principle, and Yerka's a good friend of mine, and he knows I'm using this. Who here knows Yerkapolter? Okay, a couple of you. Yerka is the most talented and gifted and amazing person I know, quite frankly. When he first joined our ministry, when he was 17, he wasn't a Christian, he was really into New Age. We knew when this person comes to Christ, he is going to be amazing. He's going to have an amazing impact for the kingdom. An amazing impact for the kingdom. He can think of ideas that the rest of us are just not able to think of. He can start a conversation with someone that the rest of us are not able to talk to. He's amazing. What he cannot do is manage anything long term. If you ask him to manage anything long term, you're asking for a world of hurt for yourself and for him. But if you want someone to come up with a really creative idea to overcome this problem, he is the one to go to. For his church, he is the biggest blessing that they have ever had. I'm using that very and he's an amazing blessing for his church when they use him the way he's gifted. When they ask him to do something that he's not gifted in, it is a disaster. So the Yerkapolter principle. Not all of your teenagers, and not all of you, are gifted to do everything. Give people the gifting, or the responsibility in the area of their gifting. If you do that, they will be successful, you will be successful, everybody's going to be happy. If you try to force someone into a mold that is not them, it's not going to work very well. Now, Yerka still loves to manage things long term, and the reason why is I'm the first leader he ever worked under. What do I love to do? I love to manage things long term. And so he learned in his head, leadership is managing things long term. And that was the first leadership principle I taught him. And I didn't mean to, it's just what I've taught him. And so even now he gets himself into situations where he's responsible for projects that he shouldn't be. And he knows it's a bad idea, but it's just ingrained in him. And we even spoke about it 2 weeks ago again. But when he's doing things, like I'll give you one story just to illustrate what he can do. He came to us with this idea. I got this great idea. I'm going to tell all the schools in my city to give me their teenagers for 4 weeks, for 2 hours a week. And in their playing fields, I will teach them to do a really big, like Spartakiada. You know what that is? Like 200 people doing the same exercise or making the same picture. And then I will fly overhead on my paraglider and I'll video all of this happening. And then we'll hire the cinema of our school, of our city, and bring all the schools into the city to watch this. Isn't that a great idea? And when he told us this, we're like, it's a creative idea, but no school is going to give you their students for that amount of time. And the cinema theater is not going to allow you to. We were like, we told him all the reasons why it wouldn't work. Well, somehow, Yerka Falter managed to talk all of the schools into giving him their students. He taught them all this amazing thing. And on the day that they had appointed, he had the entire child and teenage population of his city, and that's a few thousand people, in the fields doing these Spartakiada things. Like, who can do that? It's amazing. There's just one small detail. He stuck the video camera to his helmet using duct tape. And while he was taking off, he did this, and the video camera did this, And so he actually videoed a lot of houses and apartment blocks next to the fields. And that really sums up Yerka. He can open doors you could never imagine. He can do things and think up things you could never imagine. He can make it happen, but he'll trip up on the details. And so he needs a detail person to walk alongside him. So. There's reasons why it doesn't work. When you in any team, and I'm not talking about teenagers anymore, I'm not talking about teenage teams, I'm talking about even your adult teams. There's a book called Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's a really useful book to read if you're trying to work out why isn't my team working. And it's not written as a management book, it's written as a story. It's written as a story, so it's actually really nice to read. And they've identified five reasons why a team doesn't work. The first is that you don't trust each other. The second is that you're scared of conflict. And in this part of the world, I think that's really true. So people don't say what they think because they don't want to hurt somebody, or they don't want to rock the boat, or they don't want to look proud. Obviously, too much conflict is also very, very bad. But fear of conflict is the problem. Lack of commitment. You guys know that, I'm sure. Avoidance of accountability. If I don't do what I say I will do, someone doesn't come and ask me why. And when we're working with volunteers, we sometimes fall into this trap that we don't keep our volunteers accountable because they're volunteers. I don't want to upset them. I don't want to hurt them. I want them to say yes again. And if I tell them that they did something bad, then they might not want to do something again. But if you don't have a system of accountability in your organization, there will be no reason for people to do the things they should do. Oh, wow, that was a really quick 5 minutes. She just held up a 10-minute sign and then held up a 5-minute sign. I'm like, okay. And inattention to results. And with inattention to results, what that oftentimes means is that you forget why you exist. So, for example, in the ministries that I do, we teach churches to run rock choirs to reach unchurched kids so that they can hear the gospel and end up as part of their church. What can happen is that the churches focus too much on the music and on having a great choir, and they forget that that's not why they exist. The choir is a tool. The ministry exists to share the gospel. So you can just forget, why are we doing this? And you can focus your energy and attention here. So those are five reasons why things don't work. This is another book, The Leadership Challenge. And these are five things that do work really well if you're a leader. There's actually another book called Christian Perspectives on the Leadership Challenge, which talks about how Jesus did this. As a leader, and there are five things that these people say, and it really is worth reading, but it's a very thick book. We should model the way. That's kind of obvious. Do as I say, not as I do. If we want people to become disciples, we need to be a disciple. If we want our young people to be quiet during announcements and listen, we need to be quiet during announcements and listen. Enable others to act. And I'm talking about that for the last half an hour. Allow other people to do what they can do. Challenge the process. Don't do something because you've always done it that way. One thing that I'm always asking myself is, how can I make this better? It might be good, but how can it be better? And so I'm always, with what I'm doing, looking for better. Encourage the heart. Good job, Yuri. That was fantastic the way you did that. Oftentimes when someone does something, like I've been teaching for years, I've been giving seminars like this for years, but at the end of every seminar that I give, there's still a little part of me that feels really, really, really vulnerable. Did I do a good job? Did they like me? Did I say what I should have said? Did I say what Jesus wanted me to say? No matter how often I've taught these things, at the end of every single session, there's self-doubt. And if One person comes up to me and says, thanks, Terry, that was really good. That really helped. Bing! Now I can have lunch and be happy. And yeah, this is my job. I've been doing this for years. So imagine if a teenager or one of your teammates is doing something for the first time. Encourage the heart. Good job. Thank you for doing that. That was really nice, the way you spoke to that new person. I saw that. And celebrate success. And this is the one thing that people forget to do. Celebrate success. Celebrate success. If you have a hardworking team, you should celebrate together. And actually, Dimitri is taking his team, Dennis is taking his team on vacation next week. That's kind of nice. They'll want to work hard during the summer, won't they? Celebrate success. So, in your notes, you have more things about team meetings and things like that. I am surprised at how many leaders do not develop their teams. I'm shocked at how many leaders do not develop their teams. I am really surprised at how often teams don't meet together outside of ministry time to plan. It's really important that your teams meet together to plan and to grow and to become a family. So I would, like in my ministry, once a month, we have our team meetings. And it's part social, part spiritual, part practical. And actually, to be honest, I never used to do this, but I had a mentor and he was like, what? You never do this? And so I started doing it. And now it's like, this is the reason why we train so many leaders and why we have so many mature leaders is because of this. I can answer any questions about that at any other time. We also, at the beginning of the year, we do a planning retreat. At the end of the year, we have a review retreat, but it's also a celebration as well. So at the beginning of the year is training. The end of the year is fun with what we do. And other tools, Google Docs, if you don't use them, you should start using them. They're amazing. And final thing, Facebook. And I spoke about using Facebook to reach teenagers. You can use Facebook to manage your team. Like, we run everything on Facebook. All of our team meetings are advertised on Facebook. Our events are publicized on Facebook, are promoted on Facebook. There are so many different ways you can use Facebook to promote your ministry and to manage your teams now. What is a leader's main responsibility? Oh, see, now I'm going to feel really bad. I said this at the beginning. It's to create leaders. Okay. Again, I'm using the word leader, not disciple maker. I'm not saying that as a Christian, my job is to develop leaders. As a Christian, my job is to develop disciples. But as a leader of an organization, my job is to develop leaders.